Perfect.
So I guess you have a copy of my CV or something.
I do not. So
Oh.
what I have is the mem not member. I have a little bit of a bio from CIMA,
All
whatever you
right.
submitted to them for. I know that they're doing their conference in October, and I know that you're a speaker there. So they
Yeah.
sent me that, and then I did some Google searches.
Oh,
LinkedIn
yeah.
is a great place, so I have a
Is
little bit
it?
of a background
Yeah.
about who
Okay.
you
Yeah, and I do
are.
the same thing. So that's yeah, okay. I wasn't sure where that you can have a copy of my CV if it helps.
You know what? You can email that to me after,
Sure.
because it will definitely add
I've
some
been
perspective.
reconnecting with my past over the summer. And the entertainment question number one is interesting because it I always tell people that I was at Kodak for it inflates, right? It's up to almost 2 decades now. In fact, I was only there for 6 years. And reconnecting, I've been taking photographs. I document things photographically. I've had one exhibition. I don't pursue them. I really should, I suppose. But I've been doing it since I was an early teenager. And
Oh, now you have to
just
talk
never
about
stopped.
that.
Never stopped. So I'm looking at that as a way forward as well. It ties back to my bachelor's degree as well. And so every so often I come across a photograph, and the photograph might happen to have a date stamp on it. Not as such, because these are film cameras. So if somebody's reading a magazine, sometimes you can read the date on it. And it's like I've been sort of piecing it back together, and I realized that I was in the UK for almost 2 decades. I moved from when I was before university. I moved to the UK and worked there and did university there, and then, well, worked some more. My first career was there. So the total amount of time I spent there has somehow become the time I spent at Kodak, which is a very formative part of my development, I guess. Anyway, I don't like
Well,
talking
you
about
know what?
myself like this, but
Well,
anyway,
this is what the whole interview is about.
it's
It's all
weird.
about you.
Memory is fallible, and that's the thing, right?
This is
So
true.
good reminder of that. Anyway, so I was there for a while, but not a long time. Anyway, so I'm done
Well, you know
interrupting.
what?
We can go ahead now.
No, not at all. I was going to say, why don't we start with that? Because that seems like it's a passion point of
Yeah.
yours. And what's interesting is you said that you're sort of taking this, you're almost taking stock. So let's take stock on in audio, and let's go back to, you graduated university and you said you went to the UK. Talk to me a little bit about that. Unpack that, that first career that then
Yeah.
laddered into where you are now.
Okay, so I didn't intend to end up in the entertainment industry. We all have digital cameras now. We all carry them with us all the time. Before that, there was film. And film cameras, you went and bought a roll of film and you shot it, and you waited a couple of weeks if you were quick to see the results. We don't get those instant results anymore. And so I ended up working for the company that actually invented and patented the digital camera, the technology behind it, the sensor and the way it works. And it was a funny looking thing on a three-dimensional prototype. It didn't look like a camera at all, but it was. It looked more like a slide projector, but it was a camera. Kodak invented that thing, and a whole industry flourished. I don't know how many billions of dollars it's worth, but it's worth a lot. And it's just ironic that the company that invented the thing that took over went bankrupt. And so Kodak is not quite out of business, but it's not what it used to be. Anyway, I didn't start off thinking, oh, I'm going to go work for Kodak and work in the entertainment business, because I didn't know what that was. During my undergraduate degree at the University of Westminster in central London at the time, they've now moved to Harrow and have a different kind of campus there now. But they had a capstone course, and I took the capstone course, and somehow I ended up at the Royal Free Hospital. This is a hospital near Hampstead in London, near Hampstead Heath, and you can find it on Google Maps and Google Street View. And I noticed, I looked it up last year and had a quick look around. It hasn't changed. It's the same hospital, 30 years later, or 20 years later, or some decades later. It's the same thing. Anyway, I went in there. And I worked for a man who's been knighted now, Sir Richard Bowlby. Helped me out. And he got me to take pictures of patients, and he got me to take pictures of petri dishes and electrophoresis gel, where you take DNA and spread it out into bands, photographing and documenting all of that stuff. And he knew of my interest in technology and my interest in electronic imaging, which was the core of my degree. And I ended up in the medical physics department, where they had a gamma ray camera. This is a camera that measures the bone density of the lumbar spine, because it degrades when people get old. And this thing didn't work. And this camera, I mean, bear in mind, where are we now? We're in the late 80s. No, maybe early 90s. We're in the 90s. And this thing was 20 years old, right? And it bombards the lumbar spine with gamma radiation, and it spits it out onto a little floppy disk, which were common then, not so common now. And this thing, they had no way of producing an image. They had it on the floppy, and it was just a data file. It's not like it was a JPEG, which existed at the time. And so they had no way of doing it. My job as a undergraduate student on his capstone course was to take the data and produce a file that was suitable to send to their printer, so they could actually print effectively. If you look at your typical small finger's nail, that was the size of the image. It was absolutely tiny. If you blew it up, it would be a bunch of boxes. So I had to make it smoothed and all that. Anyway, so I remember one day I was there because they were showing me their ropes, how it works, and what it looks like, and what the workflow was. And the strangest thing happened. It was around 11 o'clock in the morning. Everyone just, that was the noise of my keys dropping, because everyone dropped whatever they were doing and shuffled out almost single file to the break room. And they all sat down, and they all had cups of tea, and they all individually did crossword puzzles. I was shocked. I thought, wow. I mean, my university wasn't like this. Everyone's running around like crazy all the time, right? And that's what it was. And so I just tried to break the ice, right? I says, look, I'm doing this project. You guys have got some interesting stuff here. The diagnostic equipment, treatment equipment, all kinds of scanners. I mean, I was in my element because I had done a project on medical imaging, which was one of my early points of fascination. I was involved as a subject in a study wherein my brain was scanned while I looked at optical illusions. And it was fascinating stuff that we could peer into the body like that without having to touch it. Completely non-invasive. So I said, well, why don't I graduate and then come and work here? They looked horrified. No. And it's like, what is it? Me? It's not me. Don't work here. Go somewhere else and enjoy yourself. You're gonna come here, you're gonna sit here doing your crosswords at 11:05 every morning. Very strange. In a way, I sort of regret it. I regret not to. I skipped ahead. I didn't graduate and then join them. I could have applied myself, and I was well known around the hospital, but I kind of regret it. And so I went looking elsewhere. And I met up with a friend who was a programmer, and he says, look, go try that Kodak place down there. They're doing some interesting stuff. You might be interested to go and see them. So I went down there, and I knocked on the door, let me in. And they said, okay, come on in. So, yeah, sure. So I was unscheduled, right? And I went in, and I had a quick interview, a preliminary thing, and said, okay, it looks like that you're the right sort of the person that we're looking for, because you know the technology. And they were just beginning. This is a business where their job, I learned later, was to take motion picture film. This is film shot in cinema cameras on the set of a movie. Almost every Hollywood film that went through the UK ended going through CineSite as well. And they take the film and they scan it. So it's now a digital file, or a great number of thousands of digital files. And special effects are done on the digital files. And then the digital files with the effects on it are put back onto film. And so that loop, that digital imaging loop, is where they wanted me. So they said where exactly within that loop was unknown. I didn't know that's what they did. And they said, well, come back tomorrow, bring your showreel, and we'll do a proper interview, because they know I just walked in off the street. I said, okay, great, no problem. We'll see you tomorrow. And I walked out. I was pretty pleased with myself, right? I got a job interview. Yeah. I kept wondering, so what's a showreel? I had no idea. Anyway, it's one of those stories, right? It's almost a, without putting too much of a spin on it, it's a very Hollywood story, how the people get into places simply by being a little bit bold, bolder than you usually would have been anyway. And that's not really me. Well, maybe it is, but it didn't feel like it at the time. So they called back later, and I figured out what a showreel was, and all I had was my portfolio of photographs that might have got me somewhere. They said, "Look, we've read your resume. Thanks for giving this. Come in the next day. We want to interview for you for a more technical spot because that seems to be exactly where you fit." A lot of people go through degrees, Kelly, and you may have come across this. Actually, maybe not, because you're a nurse. So you went through nursing school, and then you were a nurse. So your job fit completely. A lot of people go through university, particularly at you go to art school, right? And where do you end up working? Yeah, in a gallery? No, McDonald's, Starbucks, right? And it's a bit like that. But so my degree, it was a perfect fit for this job, and this job is a perfect fit for me. I didn't really give the hospital much more thought after that because you notice, like, first major job, you get swooped up and buried in it and immersed in it and in a good way. But I remember thinking, while I was deliberating, what should I do? The hospital, I thought, yeah, I might come back around. I might circle back again. What could be interesting? Anyway, it didn't happen. I'm
And you
reading the rest
did.
again because I'm
And
lost.
it's
I don't know where I am.
no, this is a fascinating story. I love this. I love this because you're talking about this Kodak camera. Actually, my dad, it wasn't Kodak that my dad had. I think it was Polaroid. But I
Yeah.
remember he had I wish we still had it. It was one of those, it almost looked like an accordion where you pulled
I
the
know it.
lens
Yeah.
out,
Yeah.
right? And then the
Those are
Polaroid
fantastic
film
machines. The
went in the back.
Instafilm,
Oh,
they're magic. It just, it's still
they
amazing to watch
are.
it happen. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, you would
Yeah,
shake it
yeah.
and the image would come up. It's actually, I mean, I grew up in the 70s, so, well, born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s, and
Yeah.
so I remember film, I remember the
We're
whole process that
contemporaries.
you're
It's
talking
the
about.
same thing. Yeah.
yeah
So I
yeah
remember all
and
that.
there's something to be said about that, right? Like I don't know, like, I mean, you take a picture nowadays and you have the image right in front of you, and you
Yeah.
know what you're shooting and you see it. There's something about taking a picture and not knowing what it's going to look like
Yeah.
and then
It,
having to wait,
yes, it
right?
causes you to be very careful. You don't want to waste a lot of film, right? And then, well, it's also
That's
expensive.
right.
It's free now.
Well,
Press
it
that
was, yeah.
button many times as you like. It doesn't cost you anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Delete. You could also delete. Didn't have that
Exactly. Yeah,
opportunity,
no,
right? If it
in the
came
old
out
days,
blurry.
film, if you shot 100 rolls of film, that was a lot of work. You had
Yeah,
to, I process my own stuff, right? So it would be a lot of work to do that. So you're careful. You don't press the shutter if you don't
absolutely.
need to. So, but
Absolutely.
yeah,
So now,
it's just strange. So I ended up working for the company that invented the digital camera, and this gigantic machines that we use, that we each one fit a room, one to scan the film and the other to record the images back onto film, were both cameras, digital cameras. One made pictures into digital, the other took digital and made it back into film. And that's, I ended up working for that company. And this is when, this is before Harry Potter. It's a film you might have seen. Event Horizon was one that you might recognize the name of. The first one I got involved on was Pinocchio, but there's so many Pinocchio productions. None of that matters. The point is, nobody was doing this. We were the only ones, and it was very expensive. Our services were premium, our quality was very high. And they flew me to New York, and I got to train with the people that designed the machine. And our sister company was in LA, so I got to spend a lot of time there as well. So it was fun. So back to the point. The point was that nobody knew this stuff. A couple of us that went through the program I went through, the Bachelor's of Photographic and Electronic Imaging Sciences, a BSc honors degree, we knew a little bit about electronic imaging, but we didn't know. It's a bit like academia is always a little bit like healthcare, several steps behind the state of the art, with the exception of imaging. And so people on the street don't know that. Film numbers, what is that? I don't know. They don't know what it is. So I had a role not only into developing workflow and making sure the quality was high and fixing problems when they were broken and liaising and all that stuff that you do as, you know, one of your first junior jobs. One of the other roles I played was that I had to train people that came in because they didn't know the system, the workflow, or how it worked. So early on, we realized it was a pattern because people came and people went. New people always need to be trained because they don't. Later on, that changed. But so the pattern developed, and I developed a course instructing people how the photographic imaging process works and how our system uses it. So I started educating. I never considered it educating. It was kind of on the job training, right? I need you guys to do a task. I need you to know when it's wrong. You can't know when it's wrong if you don't know the theory behind it. So I put together a course whereby people who would work the night shift, because newcomers always work the night shift, when they weren't actually doing something, then they can go over the material I put together. And it worked. I put several people through it and enjoyed the experience of passing on the knowledge, right?
That's
Anyway.
lovely. Now, you mentioned something about how you always knew that you'd come back around to health. So how
Yeah.
did you end up back in that health realm?
So we skip forward a couple of years, which is true. I remember I thought it was decades. It wasn't. It was like 6 years later. I got a little burnt out, really. The work was repetitive, and I didn't myself have much further training. I just had training on the job, and then the Kodak shut down the program where they made these machines. So I kind of the fire went out, and I decided to whoa, my screen just went black. There, we're back. Okay. And I decided to go back, return to Canada. And how did that work exactly? I worked for a couple of other companies, in mostly in support roles. And in support roles, you often again have this training component. Somewhere along the line, as a side hustle, I developed a beginner's photography course, and I taught it at a local community center. So we had a bunch of people in, and I taught them how to use their cameras. This time it was digital, but all the rules of taking pictures and timing and angles and all that stuff is still needs to be taught if or there's a market for it. So I did that for a bit, and I put lesson plans together, which is very interesting because again, I talked earlier on about reconnecting with my past. Because if you do a further education, or is it higher education? Further education. You do a master's or a PhD, that tends to take over your life, and everything else gets pushed to the side. And so in my reconnections, I came across some of my old materials for teaching this course, and I was shocked at how similar they are to the sort of things I do now. That was very interesting. So anyway, it was time to retrain and re-educate. I tried to get senior level jobs at places, and the response I got was, well, you know, in this industry, you're not worth the senior level positions because you don't have the experience. It's like you have to start over again. It's like that was a real bummer. If I'm going to start over again, I guess, you know, what about health? I used to be involved in health. I love this imaging thing. So I started sniffing around. I visited the National Research Council in Calgary. They have a very powerful, this is awful, a very powerful magnetic resonance scanner there, way more than you would put a human patient in. They put rats in it. So the aperture is tiny. I mean, it's like a toilet roll, right? You could put the rat in the middle of the toilet roll, induce a stroke in the rat, and then take pictures while the thing dies. It's like, oh,
That's
that's nice,
horrible.
isn't it? Poor thing. But it's important work, right? Because we need answers to the questions as to how strokes form, why they form, what can we do about it, what interventions work, what don't. You can't use human subjects for that. You have trouble getting ethics for things like that. They
That'd be
frown.
worse. That'd be worse than rats.
Exactly. Exactly. And they said, well, great. Sure. We've got some fluoroscopy you could work on. That sounds interesting. You know, go for it. Well, we can pay you a small salary. We don't have a, you know, it's not terribly well funded. These guys are from Europe, like I effectively was coming back. And it's not like Europe where you can get a full-time job doing this and learn along the way. And I says, well, I'd be interested in, I have a small salary. Fine. What do I do? Let's turn this into a master's or something. At least then I've got some training and documentation behind it. He's, oh, no, well, as soon as we do that, then we have to pay you a stipend. And it's like 10 grand a year. It's like, what? I had kids, right? So no, that was a no-go. So I needed to find a degree where I could work full time and do the degree as well. So I ended up back in Victoria, kind of where I started. It was a full circle. And I talked to the School of Health Information Science. The director there said, well, your skills and experience, you have some experience in health. You can back that up by a master's degree, which you would probably qualify for, and get back on track for this other track that you're doing. Because I had this entertainment imaging, and now I want to somehow get back to health imaging. I'm still trying to do that. So, yeah, it was at a point where I was at, financial games were being played at the company I worked at in Canada. Because I'd resigned from the UK, Kodak. I didn't work at Kodak anymore. I took on a position at a firm in Montreal. The firm in Montreal was sold to a firm in the States for its intellectual property. However, I was a support person, so meaning that they bought the company for its technology and they were going to fire all the staff. However, the company had existing contracts with its buyers, so they couldn't get rid of us support people for another year. So I waited the year. The timing was perfect, right? Christmas time, I get a phone call. Well, you know what? Time's up. Here's your severance. They gave me like 3 months' pay, which was great. I thought, well, okay, you know what? Fine. I'm starting this MSc. I've got the funding. I'm going to take it easy and just do the MSc, and I won't take on any jobs, and I'll focus on that. And I lasted about 4 weeks until someone found me, hired me, and I was off again. So anyway, I ended up getting full-time work out of it. A lot of programming experience I got as a result of that, all steered back towards health information and its technology. So that's in a roundabout way how I got from there to here. I stayed on. I finished my master's degree. There was a the moment they said you've passed, there was a whooshing noise. And the graduate secretary came in with a stack of paperwork. Here, sign this for your PhD. So, I hadn't actually made the decision. Anyway, so I'm on that track now. For what it's worth, somewhere along the line, I reconnected it to teaching and I took on work as a lab instructor and then a sessional lecturer in the areas that overlapped for me. And I applied then to become a full-time assistant teaching professor, which is a professor who teaches more than they research. And so I'm doing that. So that kind of
Fascinating.
does round it out. It's a bit of a I see. I used to, when I worked in Victoria downtown, I worked for a little while there, and I'd go to the same coffee shop as you do every morning and got a coffee. And I remember years later going in there and the same people are serving the same coffee to the same people. I don't have that kind of career. I don't have the career where I've kind of done the same thing. I've done the same sort of thing in many different places. So that's interesting. So in a way, all of that experience flows into the way I conduct myself in the classroom and get my students motivated and get them working. And I tell them a few of these stories along the way because they don't know what's happening. They don't know what to expect the moment they graduate. I remember the thrill of graduating and finally landing a real job. It was exciting. I don't feel that way anymore when I switch from job to job. I'm not likely to do so again. But yeah, it's important to remember those things.
It is, and that's what makes, and that's why I love doing these career journey
Yeah.
stories, because one, you go in thinking, you go in with one mindset, it's going to be about this, and then you
Yeah.
uncover like such a diverse background and interests and passions,
Yeah.
and it's all very fascinating. And I love the fact that you were digging into your own career journey or your own journey before this this interview started, because it gave
Indeed,
you
yeah, I've been
something
doing
to.
it for the summer. It's not something I did for the interview, but yeah.
No. Well, that's what I, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, you were
No,
doing it on
I
your
got
own.
it. So it's, it's interesting. I don't know. Everyone's career path is different, right? So there's no right way or wrong way to do it. I tell them that as well. And if you want to see some wrong moves, I can tell you some.
And it's also not linear, right? I think
Yes.
when you first get out of school, you think your path is going to be straight, and it ebbs and flows as you go through new jobs, getting laid off, getting fired, whatever it is. There's always these peaks
I
and
don't think I
valleys.
would be a skilled teacher if I haven't had those experiences. Every one of them kind of trickles in, drips in a bucket, right?
Absolutely. And that, good segue, because that leads to one of the questions. How do you think your, and I put the question is your industry experience, but I'm going to back it up. And how do you think that all the experiences that you've had feed into how you conduct yourself in a classroom?
I consider myself fortunate. I didn't graduate and then go work in a government office. I think if I had done that, I would have a different, more structured, more linear, more regimented, maybe not, because it's not me. But I think and what I ended up working for was a very, let me put it another way. When we finished a show, when we wrapped Space Jam, not the one that came out recently, the previous one with Michael Jordan, and there were troubles. There were management troubles while making that thing. And a lot of relationships were cemented there between colleagues, because the management from the US came over and kind of took over the show. Sat in the middle of the office, put their feet up on the desk, and said, "What are we going to do?" Like, kind of no direction. And it forced the groups of people to start solving the problems and kind of step aside this management type that showed up. Anyway, so when that wrapped, when it finished up, when production was done and the job was over, before moving on to the next job, this is a company of about 90, 80, I guess early on, maybe 60, 70 people. They put all of us on an airplane and flew us to Dublin and put us up for the weekend in a hotel, and off we went to, well, there were a lot of pubs. It's a lot of pubs. And that's the kind of, when the lowest level of the company, this is CineSide again, Kodak, lowest level was the job title is runner. And your job is to go and get this, or go and take this can of film and run it over to the next business and hand it off, or go over there, pick up my dry cleaner, whatever. Runners ran and did everything. When one of them would leave, they threw a party, and there was beer, and we had snacks and a small get together before we all went home, right? That stopped after a while, but that was the climate, right? And the company was highly creative, and we were all highly motivated, and it wasn't about the money. It was about being involved in something brand new. No one's seen this before. The previous effects were Star Wars, where it was done completely differently. Right now, we were doing everything on the computer, and it was a brave new world, and everyone was really excited about it, and myself included. That peak, I think, led to the swift decline and led to me kind of burning out of that. That's the kind of thing I come from, right? So work is fun. Work is interesting. If it's not interesting and not fun, you shouldn't be doing it. Okay. And I tell my students that as well. So how does all this experience translate back to the classroom? Well, it's become who I am, and this is how I treat my students. I don't treat them like workers that have to do this and do that and pass the exam. I try to make classes engaging and interesting. And my work with Chima as well. I can go only give you a small example of that, because I'm working on improving the curriculum for the undergraduate level. But I'll throughout the year on the social media, every so often you come up with a post of some weird disease, I don't know, worms in the brain or something like that, or the patient whose tears turn to blood. I forget what it's called, but there are ICD codes for all of these things, even the weird corner cases. So I start collecting all of these. And for the assignment I might give them, here's five YouTube videos. Go find out what's wrong with them and make an ICD encoding of this, or turn it into SNOMED. so that we can store it properly in our EHR, and then we can do secondary use on it and stuff like that. I know that helps, but that's kind of my thinking. The attitudes that helped me along the way, I just bring them right back in. And I try not to turn my classroom into a government office, or what I perceive a government office to be like.
Well, I was going to say, having been a student at one point in time, well, I shouldn't say at one point in time. I think we're all always learning, at
Oh,
least I
definitely.
am.
Yes.
I think real world applicability has its place. It's hard to, and I remember even going through nursing school, like you'll read a piece of theory and it doesn't make any sense until you see
No,
it. But at least it didn't for
that's right.
me, and I think a lot of people are like that. Like they When you can make it tangible for people, it's more engaging, it's more exciting, and then they can mesh the two together.
Indeed. And if you hit the same piece of knowledge from many different directions, if you engage as many senses as possible, if you can make people laugh as well, you might remember a beer commercial because it made you laugh, right? It's that's what we're after. Those little things that, Anyway, it's
Absolutely. Well, and it's fascinating that you say that because, to be honest, when I first started learning about ICD coding, I thought, oh my goodness, how do these people do this every single day, all day? But it's interesting because they don't see the codes as a code.
true.
They recognize that there's a person attached to it, so they personalize it. And I was like, oh, makes
That's
sense,
interesting.
right?
And the how do they do it is interesting as well. People do ask me that in the classroom, like, what happens? You get all these handwritten, illegible doctor's notes, you got to turn them into dads and knackers abstracts. How do you do that? Well, the answer is, or used to be, that you would have printouts like that thick of bound up prints of the standard, and you would be looking things up and using the logic within that. And you'd be doing it in the basement in an office next to the morgue, and again, just adding something like that, it's like they're going to remember now, how is this done? And they have all this informatics background. What do you mean it's not on a database? Well, it isn't, it's on the paper. So they're all fired up, like, let's make a change. And if that ever happens, I'll be happy. Anyway,
I'm laughing because you said, they're in the basement next to the morgue, and
it's
literally
true.
most people that I talk to, and even having worked in hospitals, yeah, health records or health information was always in the basement. I don't know why, but that's where they were.
It's the strangest thing, right? Yeah, that's right. It's in the dungeon.
Is. Hopefully somebody will design a hospital someday and give health information the top floor with a glass window, like a solarium.
It's fun. Yeah. Did we cover that off? I think, I don't know if we got it.
Honestly, I've basically thrown most of these questions out the window because you've answered them in one way, shape, or form
Yeah,
just through
I think so.
talking,
I think
which has been
so.
awesome.
Question 8 is interesting. What do you consider to be the most rewarding aspect of your career so far? That's a tough one, the career. Yeah, I don't know.
That was going to be the question that I was going to ask you next.
Really? Oh, well, that's good. We're on the same page. I think, wow, that's tough. Right now I'm not going to invent the next new thing. At least I'm not pursuing anything like that. My role here is I had a lot of fun. I've had a great time out there, and it's now time I feel a duty to give back. I know that sounds trite and contrived, but it's a real feeling. I feel a strong sense of duty to keep doing what I'm doing. What I'm doing is training the next generation to go forward, because the very last thing I want to do is be them going into the workforce. I don't want to do that. I don't want to work in the health records department in the basement next to pathology. No, thank you. No.
Well, I don't think it's trite at all because, even from the beginning of our interview where you said that, you taught people how to take pictures and then you created documents. I can sense that passion for wanting to pass on the knowledge that you have.
That's a theme actually all the way through. You're right. Thanks for pointing that out. It's true. So the rewarding aspect is seeing this happen. I get students returning to me now asking me to recommend them to do a master's degree to keep going. And they come to me. I want you to, because I was in your class and I remembered this and that. And so that's great. To have that full circle, that doesn't always happen, right? And it's fun to get that. So I find those little interactions highly rewarding. The research is fun too, but I think the teaching is paramount for me.
And I get that sense. You
Yeah.
obviously love what you do, and I think you've loved what you did, when you initially, right, taking pictures, the entertainment business, health, right? So I think all of it is a culmination of where you are now, I should say, is a culmination of all the passions that you've had along the way. And
I
that
haven't,
is rare. I
it
think
hasn't
that's
quite
rare.
come to the singularity yet, and it will soon when I don't know. We'll see what happens when I get through my PhD.
You'll have that aha moment.
Exactly. Well, so imaging is something that's still done more than ever. We make millions of medical images in a hospital, in some hospitals every month. All right. There's a ton of data there. Where is the imaging informatics in our program? How does that relate to standards? It does, and it's not really in our program. We mention it, we talk about PACS, we talk about the RISs in the hospitals or health authorities, but not we don't go into depth on it. So I think the singularity, if everything does come together, will be when I finally connect my bachelor's degree to my PhD and go forward in a research program. So that's my goal
Interesting.
anyway. That's what's next.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But one of the questions was on research projects, but you're not currently doing anything. You've already answered what impact you hope to have. One question that I have on here that has sparked my interest, and I think I read a little bit of it in, it was either your bio or maybe on your LinkedIn profile, I don't remember, was about micro-credentials in higher education.
Yeah, I'm currently the faculty administrator for, is that right? Faculty coordinator for the micro credential, the health terminology standards thing. If you have a bachelor's degree or not, you can come and get a certificate to say that you know something about SNOMED, ICD, and all the other standards involved in health and in healthcare interoperability.
How do you think that's going to affect or change people's perception of higher education? Or I find that it's a very, I think it's a great idea. Like you can stack all these little certificates to make something. So I see the
I
positive
think
in it.
you're right, and I agree. And I think the future is what you just said, the ability to stack all of these things up and then turn it into a master's degree somehow, or a bachelor's, or something, right? Because you can, you're especially if you're in our field, you're a nurse, you could do, if you don't already have a master's of nursing, you could do one. It might take you 5, 6, 7 years because you're working all the time, right? I don't mind it. And that's a long time. So you could take this standards credential while you're working full time, pay far less fees, and get a usable thing, a focused area of knowledge in a year. Pay fees to CIMA and get another thing that you can put on your business card. So what I don't see is the bridge between that. Like right now, what is the connection? Well, if you get this certificate, then maybe you're better qualified to get into the master's program for health information science, for example. Okay, but there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. So this notion of assembling your degree by picking this and picking that and doing enough work in whatever that means or however that's measured to turn it into a higher degree, I think that's going to be on the horizon. We talk about it at the faculty as well, that we might see degrees put together that way. It's right now it's kind of limited to a major in this and a minor in that, and boom, there you go. But what if you could combine history, art, a little bit of medicine? You wouldn't qualify to be a doctor. You certainly wouldn't be a nurse because you hadn't focused enough, but you could be a something. You're going to go to art school and work at Starbucks anyway. You might as well get something that you like out of it, right? So I don't know. Is it the way forward? I think it's part of it. Certainly for upgrading skills, I think there's a strong argument for niche programs. Okay, so the certificate program that we're talking about, the one that CIMA has accredited us for, is highly focused. It's not even health information management, right? That's the umbrella that it's in, but really this is strictly about standards. And it's enough. If you've got that, you can go and work for Infoway or carve out a career, be a specialist, be the go-to person. It's great. But yeah, but it isn't recognized as a higher degree. So the connections aren't quite there yet. Certainly it's a good first step.
So I have two things to say. One, you mentioned, can't remember the exact words, but it's missing the bridge. What do you think
Yeah.
that bridge would be?
Some I hate to use the word standards again, but some way of accumulating enough credits by doing smaller chunks of work over a longer period of time and turning it into a real degree because you'd have earned it, right? So you want to get a BSc, and I mean, I'd love to go back and do a master's in some form of art, for example. Okay, and how can I go do that? Well, I got to enroll in the BSc at the art school, and it's going to take a long time and 5 courses a term. Not going to happen. I'm going to go nuts if I try to do that at my stage. So, I've got no way forward, right? But if I could pick it off piece by piece and assemble my own set of interests, did I answer your question? Like, I felt like I wandered off again.
You did 100%, which sparked my next question, which was actually my last question. Do you think, and this may be a touchy subject, so I don't know how to gauge this,
Oh,
but
don't
do
worry about
you
it.
think higher education? So we're all used to, my generation is used to, you graduate high school, you get a bachelor's degree, you maybe go and get a master's degree, right? And then you get a job and you work. Now, I almost see a flip, and I have teenage children. I almost see a flip in thinking where it's like, well, why would I want to go and get a degree if when I graduate, I'm going to end up working at Starbucks when I could maybe do this certificate, this certificate, this certificate, this certificate that would qualify and work at the same time that gives me both that lens of practical plus educational. So, do you think that higher education institutions are going to have to rethink the way that they deliver academia?
Well,
I know, loaded question.
they
And
haven't in
I hate to put you
500 years.
on the
Well, they haven't.
spot.
In 500 years, it hasn't happened, right? It's a pretty conservative institutional way of thinking. The way we conduct business on campus is the same way we did it in the year 1600. It's more modern than Zoom, but really we're still cooking with fire like we did in the Capes, right? So no, I don't see it changing all that much. I think there's something to be said though. This notion of why do a degree if you're going to get a McJob? Because you haven't specialized. I mean, if you do sociology, there are very few jobs that are strictly sociology. Most of them are academic, and it's highly competitive. Very few spots involved. So I think if you specialize, I did, you did, many people do, then the job follows. I haven't been unemployed since I graduated for more than 2 months, and that was by choice, because I specialized, and I am a person, and you are a person who is useful in our organizations. But if you do a, for lack of a better term, a wishy-washy degree, you're not going to be. There's another thought about this. If you're really interested in sociology, if you find it absolutely fascinating, why not do the degree? Let's say you do something else. You end up running a business later, or you end up in an administrative position. You still have that to fall back on. You've been trained a certain way of thinking. You've learned a whole bunch of new things intensely for 4 years. We don't learn like that forever, right? It's these packets of time where we do that. And so I think if you don't know what you want to do and you don't have any strong passions and you do a degree, you're going to be disappointed. If you go into it and you have a strong passion in something, even if it's for something that doesn't lead to a proper job, such as a degree in fine arts, you can still get a lot out of that, and it will change the way you think for the rest of your life, hopefully for the better. And if you have a passion for something and you know you can make money at it because it's a skilled thing, then go for the niche areas. That's where I think the micro credentials really fit in, because it allows you to short circuit. It's a shame, though, someone to do this micro credential without the bachelor's degree or without much experience in work experience is going to miss out on a lot of the theory behind why we're even having these conversations. You know, I find that quite interesting. So, yeah, my advice to
Answer.
people like that is to try to measure yourself, be introspective, find your passion, and go for whatever it is that your interest directs you at, or pick a niche field.
I think that is some sound advice,
Well, I
actually.
would say, yeah, but yeah.
The introspective piece, right? And I think it's hard. Not hard. I think it's challenging when you're 18, 19
It
years
is.
old and you're coming out of school,
Yeah.
and spent 5 years intensely or 4 years intensely in high school to really know what you want. I think you have a
Yeah.
sense,
Yeah.
right? And so, I hate seeing people go to university and saying, yes, I want to do sociology or I want to do psychology. And, halfway through the program, they realize, oh, kind of
Happens all
not
the
what I
time,
wanted to
right?
do, right?
And then, so
So,
then you
yeah.
switch and do a major in this and a major in that. So that
Yeah.
notion of assembling your own degree is, I think, goes a long way to solve problems like that. A lot of places, law, I think nursing as well. No way that's wrong. Can you go into a nursing program directly, or do you have to do 2 years of something first?
You can go into a nursing program directly. When I started,
Right.
I did, so I started before degree was mandatory, so I did a diploma. So I had to do
Okay.
pre-health first. So I
Hi.
had to do like
Yeah.
a semester of pre-health courses, and
Yeah.
that's what sparked my interest. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do
Yeah.
realistically, and I took those
Yeah.
pre-health courses and was really good at it, and I love people, and I thought, oh, well, maybe nursing, right? So I
Yeah.
kind of had a sense.
Yeah. Health informatics is quite interesting in that respect, because it sounds like a niche area, but it's not. You can go through computer science and get your computer science bachelor's degree and then go work for, I don't know, the big three or four companies that everyone seems to want to go and work for. Or you could do ours and you get a little bit of computer science and you get a little bit of anatomy, and you get a bit of everything, right? So when you pop out of that degree as a professional, and you end up as a professional because you have to do three co-op terms. So you've had a year of professional experience by the time you graduate, and then you can pick a direction from there. We have an almost 100% placement rate as a school for the undergrad program, and it's great because any kid can come in not really knowing what they want, but health sounds like a good idea, and they can drift in. So as a result, one of my students is trying to get into med school now, having graduated, and she may not make it, but she's going to give it a good try, right?
It's always
Partially,
worth a good
maybe some
try.
of the things you do at university is part of that journey where you're doing the self-discovery. I've got a 16-year-old upstairs. It's not a clue.
I'm with you on that. I have a
You
19-year-old in the basement, still no clue.
know
So,
what I mean? Send him to the HIMSS school or her. Anyway.
anyways, Simon, it was a pleasure meeting
Yeah, it
you, and
was.
I'd love to meet you in person. And you can teach me how to take pictures because that is something
Are
that
you
I've
going to
always
this
wanted to do.
conference?
I am not. No, I'm not.
We should get a freebie
And
ticket.
everybody that I've talked to said that. Like, what? You've
Books would be
interviewed
great
us and
because
you're not
this is,
coming?
yeah. Anyway.
This has been fun. And like I said, I love this is my passion project. I love doing this and I love
Yeah.
getting to know people and finding out who they are behind their titles and all
That's
that
nice.
other stuff.
I think you're
So,
doing good work, and
pleasure.
I know where you're coming from, so that's great.
Thank you so much for your time.
I have to go make
All right.
supper.
Yeah, me too. I'll
Yeah.
talk to you soon.
Bye,
Bye.
Kelly.